You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, home of the Peltoncast. It's time for our first recap pod of the season. Woo! Sound the sirens. Alerts everyone you know.
This is not our first emergency pod, if you recall correctly. Jadeveon Clowney was our first emergency pod.
The first post-game emergency pod. Let's go with that.
An emergency happened tonight at CenturyLink Field.
Almost a lot of emergencies, if we're going to be honest.
Before then, we have to talk about the beer that we're drinking. And that is from our good friends at Silver City Brewery in
Silverdale, Washington
is the Trophy Life IPA. We've had this before, but it is fitting because the Seahawks, under this current regime, have a trophy and are living the trophy life, and the Rams didn't score a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Scored 3 points. Fun fact. They scored many more points than that tonight. But you know why? It didn't matter because they missed a field goal at the end of the game. No.
They scored 3 more points in the Super Bowl than they scored in the last minute of tonight's game.
Not just because of that. It was partially because of a man we need to test to. And that man is Russell Wilson.
Oh.
Pete Carroll said post-game that he thought it might have been the best game that Russell Wilson ever played. I wouldn't go quite that far, but this is high up there.
Can you give us the Russell Wilson? Can you break it down for us?
The oeuvre of Russell Wilson was the fourth most yards per attempt that he's ever had in a regular season game at 11.7. Sadly, that came down a lot in the fourth quarter. He entered with 13.2, which would have been second only to the game at Detroit last year, which I don't think people think of it when they think of the great Russell Wilson games.
At Detroit.
Yeah, there was the one where there was a really long Ed Dixon play, right? That sort of thing. I think it kind of goosed the numbers a little bit. It was not necessarily
they goosed the numbers.
Untitled goosed game, the numbers. Second would be 13.2 in a 20-13 win over St. Louis during his rookie season, where he attempted just 19 passes. Third at 12.8 at Minnesota at home versus Minnesota in 2013.
Wow, none of these are notable games at all.
No, not even.
But this is, we're talking about both yards
the
per
actual
attempt.
Memorable game. He had 14.9 yards, or that's adjusted yards per 12.2 yards per attempt against Carolina in the 2015 playoffs.
Nice. So, but this is a game where it wasn't just the yards per attempt; it was also the yards overall. They had the quality and the quantity.
I mean, they didn't necessarily have, they had more quantity than those games. His top three before this, the three games where he had higher yards per attempt, all fewer than 20 pass attempts.
Yes.
He only had 23 in this one.
I mean, so the stats that I kept seeing at the stadium was Seahawks completion percentage, over 75% for most of the game. And where did he finish?
17 of 23.
Incredible, which is a...
I don't know that off the top of my head. I'd have to go to Excel here.
Wow. Also, you do your math in Excel. You go.
I have it open.
Notably, that you go to Excel to do your math.
74%.
74% completion percentage. And they kept showing the yards per attempt also on the screen. It was like the Seahawks were at 13, at 11. And the Rams in this game, as the counterpart, were at, where did they finish?
Well, they finished at 8.1. There were a lot of yards on the final drive.
But they were hovering around 7.5.
Where Jared Goff got up to 395 yards passing in this game. Jared Goff, I didn't realize that. He threw 49 passes. Anyways, I mean, the other thing about the differentiates this game from those is just the stakes, the need to keep scoring because of the Rams' success on offense during the second half of this game. It wasn't quite as back and forth offensively as like the Steelers game or the Texans game at home. Those two like classic high scoring offensive wins, but it was in that ballpark.
If a person named Patrick Mahomes did not exist, right?
Yes.
Russell Wilson would be the favorite for MVP at this moment.
Yes, that is accurate.
This is Russell Wilson's MVP season, even if he doesn't win it.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Just an incredible game.
Like Richard Sherman's Defensive Player of the Year season. What was that, 13?
Didn't they win the Super Bowl?
They did win the Super Bowl. There he did not win Defensive Player of the Year.
He also had the defining defensive play of the entire season.
I'm not disputing it, which I got to say for a second, I thought about, so we have the tip, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was not quite a tip. It was just a bobble.
I want to talk about that play because we need to give it a name later. But Can we give another toast to the man who got inducted into the Ring of Honor at today's game? And that is former Seahawks owner Paul Allen.
I mean, pouring some out. It was so tell us about the ceremony, because they didn't show it at all on television, really, except for the actual Ring of Honor spot and the banner coming down from that. That's so all we saw.
They didn't show the video?
No.
So they had representatives. They had either the player themselves or representatives of all of the previous Ring of Honor winners, which they nice. Must have shown at some point.
No.
Didn't wow. I'm sure you got a lot of nice Joe Buck action, though. So they had representatives or those players from all the previous Ring of Honor players. The biggest ovation, you want to guess who it was for?
Walter Jones?
Oh, the big man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one who people in the stadium saw play live.
Is Sean Alexander in the Ring of Honor?
He is not.
Okay.
I mean, most of them were from the 80s.
Yeah.
I would say that if Cortez was there, he probably would have gotten a very big ovation.
Yes.
The last two were Walt Jones and Tez. And those, I think, are two of like the most iconic players who are in the Ring of Honor from kind of our era of Seahawks football. Most people who were at that stadium never saw Dave Craig play football, right?
I don't know if I would say most, but yes.
It's probably like 90% of people never saw, or at least in person, never saw Steve Largent, Jim Zorn, Dave Craig, Kurt Warner, right?
Yes.
I mean, most people in the stadium are about the same age as me.
I don't know if I agree with that take.
Don't you think the average age is like 35 years old?
I think the median age might be late 30s.
Yeah. So
we're getting bogged down here.
But it makes sense. Walt Jones gets the biggest ovation.
Yes.
Steve Vrabel gave a speech about Paul Allen, and then they went to a video. And the thing that they highlighted in the video was, and this is, it's the most important thing that Paul Allen did. They talked a little bit about the stadium getting made, but really talked about saving the team in Seattle, which yep. I thought it was so fitting on the day that the Sonic Boom podcast via Luminary, via the Ringer and Luminary, came out, where I'm listening to this podcast about the Sonics being stolen from Seattle because there was no White Knight. There was no Paul Allen in that situation, yep. right? It was like Steve Ballmer came a little bit too late.
Yep.
He came slightly later than Paul Allen did, right? They let it get a little bit too far down the road, and the team wasn't able to be saved. And I think, honestly, like what Paul Allen did for the Seahawks probably made people think that that would happen again for the Sonics.
We've discussed it on podcasts before.
But that's what Paul Allen did. That's why we've had this entire era of Seahawks football, is because Paul Allen showing up, buying the team, and keeping them in Seattle.
It is difficult to imagine our lives, this city, or this podcast, particularly the Emergency Podcast, without the Seahawks being in Seattle. So it is impossible probably to overstate the magnitude of that happening.
Okay, can we talk about the game itself,
though? Sure. Okay, all right. So you wanted to start in the fourth quarter?
I feel like a lot happened in the fourth quarter.
A lot did happen. A lot happened in the first three quarters, too. But, okay, we'll pick it up. The Seahawks, after a holding penalty on a 3rd and 7 where Russell Wilson got close enough that they would have probably gone for it, held to 4th and 17, kick a Jason Myers 42-yard field goal to go down at 26-24 in this game with 13:37 left. And then the Rams get the ball and march down the field.
Okay, so I don't want, this is where I want to start. I don't want to say that they marched down the field.
Okay.
Because the Seahawks almost got off the field.
That's true.
Right? It is, and they had a couple of times during this game where it felt like they were really getting to Goff. And this was one of those series. There were other series where it felt like Goff was like making plays. He was reacting really well. I don't think this was a bad game by Jared Goff.
It's an interesting debate whether this was, I think it was a below average game.
He was half and half. It was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Goff, yes. right? Because there were some plays where it's like, wow, he threw such a perfect pass there, right? He's throwing these passes where he anticipated the receiver being open. There were definitely some beautiful play calls. There was one time where, there was one series where the Rams just came down and scored and Tyler Higbee got a lot of action. And I was like, oh, the Rams broke out all the plays for that series.
Yeah, Sean McVay's overrated talk. Yeah,
no. They were down 14-6, and he cracked the glass. Right.
For the record, by the way, did you say it was Mr. Goff and Dr. Jekyll?
No, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Goff.
Yeah, it's Dr. Jekyll is the real one.
Oh, okay.
So it's Dr. Goff in this case.
Dr. Goff and Mr. Yeah. Jekyll.
Mr. Hyde. Look, this podcast is about nothing.
Dr. Goff and Mr. Hyde.
Pedantic comments.
So, 3rd and 10 at the 25-yard line on the series. Goff throws it up to Brandon Cooks, right? On a play that there's... to me, this was perfect coverage by Shaquille Griffin. There's very little else that Shaquille could have done.
Technically, it was 3rd and 8, but again.
Your mom's 3rd and 8. So... Third and long, right? There's this perfect coverage by Shaquille Griffin. And then being at the game, we couldn't really see what happened. Did he end up dropping the ball at some point?
The ball got knocked out by Shaquille Griffin after he was already, like, had rolled over and the play was dead.
So then Brandon Cooks is injured and eventually left the game with a concussion, right? Or at least to be evaluated for a concussion.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing an update. But would not be surprised.
And then Pete challenges that it's offensive pass interference. What are you thinking in that moment?
Well, I can look up the text I sent to our group thread.
What did you say?
This was a hormonal challenge.
A hormonal challenge.
That's what Pete says when he like has bad challenges. I was hormonal.
You didn't think there was a chance?
I mean, to me, it was a good no call because of the fact that both players, there was hand fighting on both sides. I thought I didn't see anything that rose to a level of offensive or defensive pass interference.
No, and I think they made the right call in the end, but also the EPA difference in this. If the Seahawks get the ball back there,
oh yeah,
it's a huge difference for them, right? Especially because they're going to have very good field position. I think it was worth its challenge on that play.
Fair.
What was the challenge? So the Rams get the ball, eventually move a little bit farther downfield. How would you describe Sean McVay's challenge on the ball to the end zone that was clearly incomplete? Was that hormonal?
Yes. No, I thought about making a McVay-Pete Carroll comparison.
Both had hormonal challenges. Yeah. At the same time, if they score a touchdown there, the game's over.
The game is not over. I mean, there was still over 9 minutes remaining at that point, but it would have been a much tougher road for the Seahawks to walk.
Okay, so the Rams eventually hit a field goal in that series.
Well, we should talk about this is the series, right, where there's the pass to Robert Woods, kind of a smoke option on the left side, a screen pass to Woods, and Brandon Jackson comes over and makes the play to tackle.
Oh, my God.
A phenomenal play there by
Brandon Jackson.
Because
there were times where it felt like the Seahawks, not times, there was this entire game where it felt like the Seahawks were not great at tackling. And it was just like, attack the Rams on these tackles. And it was something that we saw there were throughout the entire team where they weren't doing it, and Brandon Jackson did it in that moment. It was so, like, he went out and made a play.
So the Rams settle for a Greg Zuerlein 36-yard field goal. It's still a one-possession game, 29-24, the Rams leading because they have previously missed on a two-point conversion. A big that was another big replay in this game where that was changed on replay. Al Woods helping make that tackle of Goff just short of the goal line to keep it a five-point game. So Seahawks get the ball back with... Let's see, 9:19 left in the fourth quarter.
And then really a drive where, I mean, this drive took a long time.
It did. It was not a quick strike offense.
By the time, they got it at 9:19.
Yes.
And they gave the ball, they punted the ball back at 2:28.
They did not punt the ball back.
Well, they gave the ball back to they kicked off at 2:28.
Yes.
Think of that drive.
It was a seven-minute drive. It was a clock-killing drive. In a game they trailed.
And that there was a lot that happened after that.
So much that happened after that.
Okay, but can we fast forward to 1st and goal at the LA Rams 9?
Well, you know, Rams fans would probably want to discuss the Clay Matthews personal foul.
It was what it was. That was a roughing the passer. He got hit late. He led with his helmet. Boom, it's a roughing the passer. He hit the top of his helmet squarely on Russell Wilson's helmet. It is a roughing the passer.
No, he didn't hit Wilson's helmet. I still like the call because you just shouldn't be going high in that situation. Much as I'm perfectly okay with the personal foul that was called on the Seahawks for going low on Goff, and even would have been fine with Jadeveon Clowney being called for a personal foul when he got his hand up towards Goff's head and they ruled that it was not a severe enough blow to warrant a personal foul.
But this was roughing the passer. But okay, so 1st and goal at the 9-yard line. Just this is emotions about what is happening.
Oh,
we have Chris Carson left tackle to LA 11 for -2 yards.
One of my greatest pet peeves. A lot of people hate like the goal line fade. The second and 10 run. There's a lot of things to hate in football. Mm-hmm. My least favorite thing is running on first and goal from the 9 or the 10, because what are the odds you're actually going to run it all the way to the end zone and getting a couple yards
CJ
closer?
CJ Crosize did it last
he
week.
Did. He did. It's true. Getting that a little bit closer doesn't really help you your chances of scoring a touchdown that much.
When Carson has this run, you're thinking to yourself, okay, so we're going to be down 2. Right? You're like, they're yes. kicking a field goal on the series. Second down, there's a pretty bad pass to DK Metcalf that was never really catchable.
Yes.
On a play where they were trying to do the DK Metcalf is tall, they were trying to have him go up and get it, but Russ just missed the pass. It was kind of awkward all around.
A
rare
miss.
Third and goal from the 11. Brian Schottenheimer channels his inner Freddie Kitchens.
It wasn't fourth and 9.
And runs it. On third and 11, third and goal from the 11, that hand up to Carson. And then he actually looked good for a second.
Yeah, for a second it looked like he was going
to
break it.
There was a little bit of space, but in that moment they had to be saying to themselves, we're going for it on fourth down no matter what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the game was under 3 minutes at that point. Like, counting on stopping the Rams and getting the ball back with 2 timeouts, it just wasn't realistic.
Can I posit a theory to you?
Okay.
What? The year is 2018. It's October 5th.
You jump in the George Michael time machine. The sports machine.
George Michael time sports machine.
Yeah, it is a time
October
machine.
October 5th. Right? It was October 5th. Was that not the date? Pretty sure it was.
I'm not sure where we're going here.
The Rams have the ball up by 2 points. I was in Minneapolis. I don't remember this exactly. The Rams have the ball up by 2 points.
It was October 7th.
October 7th?
Yeah.
Okay, the show that I was at in New York was October 5th, and then the wedding that I was at was 2 days later. So, the date's October 7th. The Rams have the ball up by 2 points, correct?
Yes, 33-31.
And end up salting out the clock. They get a controversial first down, right? Or they pick up a fourth down that... They end up keeping the ball, and the Seahawks never get the ball back again when a field goal would have won the game. And in that very moment,
they went for it at their own 42 on fourth and 1.
Pete Carroll said to himself, I'm not letting this happen again.
Okay.
This decision, one calendar year later.
Wow, I had not put that together.
Was influenced by what happened the previous year, because he was saying, we're not kicking this field goal and trying to get the ball back because we're never going to touch the ball again.
Which is not wrong.
And he's right. So this is 4 down territory because Pete has a memory.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes the memory doesn't work as well in those sorts of things.
4th and goal from the 5. Russ looks like he's going down. We're thinking this is a sack. They grab his legs. He escapes from it. He looks like there's space. We're like, Russ, run! Run! He puts up his hands, tosses it, boom! There's Chris Carson wide open.
Whoa.
And then we're all celebrating. I can't really see what's going on. The ball's up in the air. What is happening? And Chris Carson reels it in off the bobble.
So, understand it. I was wondering whether you could tell in the stadium, like, everything that was happening. It was very clear on TV.
I mean, my angle was pretty, it was right in front of us. And so people were standing, like, pumping their fists up. So it was hard to see. We think it's a touchdown right when he throws it.
Exactly.
Because you can see how wide open Chris Carson is.
As soon as the camera pans from Russell Wilson and the ball leaves his hands to, you know, Carson, there's no one around him. And you're like, oh, thank God. And then it goes up in the air. And you're like, oh, God, no. I mean, like... People joke about a heart-stopping moment. My heart literally was racing after that play.
We benefited in this game from how wide open Chris Carson was. Because imagine if he bobbles that and then a Rams defender hits him. Yeah. He's not catching that pass.
Yeah.
But he was so wide open. And, oh, Russell! Russell, with the vision, seeing Chris Carson there, not trying to force it on the run, because he probably would have been stopped if he does, looks up, he's not past the line of scrimmage, dumps it off to Carson, a perfect throw. Thank you, Russell.
So then the two-point conversion fails.
Which
DK Metcalf did not look like he was quite ready for the pass when Russ threw it.
It was a really awkward-looking play.
And Marcus Peters did just enough to break that up in the end zone. And
that's
what
Marcus Peters' nickname is just enough.
That was crucial, just as the earlier two-point conversion that the Rams missed was crucial, as it meant that a field goal for the Rams would win them the game. And they got the ball back, despite the Seahawks running a lot of clock, with so much time remaining.
So, okay, the Rams get the ball, 2:28 left, Seahawks have two timeouts, Rams have two timeouts. What you're thinking in this moment?
That the Rams are going to go down and hit a field goal as time expires. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking, I hope they score fast.
Yeah.
I hope they score this quick late so that we still have some time after that.
But instead...
So, first down, Jared Goff. They got a first down there?
They did.
I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Incomplete on the next first down because Cooper Kupp had... I think, let me look up these stats. 350 catches in this game. Cooper Kupp is, I swear to God, he's the most uncoverable receiver in the entire NFL.
Well, particularly for the Seahawks, but he had a mere 9 catches for 117 yards. I would say that Gerald Everett, despite his role in the next play we're going to talk about here, was actually the more uncoverable receiver in this game. 7
catches. Gerald Everett had like a couple of monster plays.
136 yards.
But Cooper Kupp was open on every single pass.
It's true. I mean, but he was targeted 17 times
so
in this game.
This was the moment where the Seahawks started getting into Goff's head a little bit. They got the pressure. First down pressure. Second down pressure. Bradley McDougald almost picks it off.
An awesome play by Bradley McDougald.
And you're thinking, if they could just get a turnover. I turn to Chris, who's next to me, and I say, you know, Goff has fumbled it in every single one of these games. And I was just like, I'm just throwing it out there.
I kept waiting for the Jared Goff fumble. I agree with you.
Letting him know. I was like, but then...
Then his pass, intended for Gerald Everett, the aforementioned Gerald Everett, goes a little bit long. It wasn't off his hands, was it? It wasn't tipped. Yeah, no, it wasn't. And Tedrick, it just seems like a harmless incompletion. Tedrick Thompson gets up and runs with it, and it's like, come on, Tedrick, what are you doing? We know you didn't catch this. And then they show the replay, and it turns out that somehow Tedrick did catch it, that he cradled it with his right hand and tipped it up to his left hand and was able to catch it without it ever touching the ground. Tedrick Thompson. We are lifelong Tedrick Thompson fans.
Tedrick Thompson did nothing wrong. On this play, like literally in the stadium, I'm like, ha. He's like acting like that's a pick or whatever. Let's get to fourth down.
Right.
Right? We're just excited that it's a 3rd and 10. And Tedrick gets his hand under the ball. You're like, wait, is that... Is there a chance?
Could that be?
Pete, I think maybe you should take a closer look at this one. No way it'll actually happen, but it's worth the risk. And then we see it again and again and again, and the crowd is celebrating more and more and more. And Mato de Dios! Tedrick Thompson gets his hand under the ball, tips it up to himself. The greatest individual defensive play we have seen in Seattle since the tip. This should have won the game. This was the game. Tedrick made the fucking play, right?
Well, what a timely reference with that Maradona doc out on HBO. Great watch.
And Tedrick celebrated that shit like he just won the World Cup. He went to both sidelines. He went to one end zone, and then he came back to the other end zone because Tedrick made the greatest play of his entire career, and he was not about to let people not know about it.
That all checks out. We only saw one end zone, I think, on
TV. He went to both. He went to the far end zone, and then he came back, and I was like, they better call this a pick, because you've done a lot of celebrating, Tedrick. And you're feeling it in the stadium. You're like, this is going to be a pick. But then...
Then you realize... You read Ben B's tweets, in my case.
Oh, God. Ben.
The doubter.
Oh.
Ben Doubter. Benny Doubter. Which is a great nickname for him that we should definitely adopt. Points out that the Rams could still get the ball back with, I think he said, about 1:40 left because of the fact that they have two timeouts plus the two-minute warning. The fact that Tedrick Thompson wasn't able to run, like, he probably wouldn't have taken up 8 seconds, but hypothetically, he could have run long enough to get it down to the two-minute warning, and that would have dramatically changed the tenor of the game.
Okay, well, I'm gonna do a little bow to Tedrick.
Okay.
It was a beautiful thing, an incredible play that we did not imagine how much more would happen after it.
Again, so many things. There were technically three possessions after this.
This play, though, as far as like an individual defensive play, it's just like there was actually a pass earlier, one of the before the Rams kicked that field goal to go up 29-24, Goff like had an errant pass to the end zone, and it kind of reminded me of Matt Fink, right? Where it was like Cameron Williams was always there whenever there was an errant Matt Fink pass, whereas Jared Goff, every time he threw it to no one, there was never anybody there, and it was like, why isn't there a safety just standing there to scoop up this terrible Jared Goff pass?
And finally, there was.
Kind of. So then the Seahawks have this possession, right? Two timeouts left for the Rams. We're all thinking, we're all crunching the numbers, right? And we're like, the Rams are getting this ball back with, unless the Seahawks, I'm like, they are 30 feet away from this game being over. They're 30 feet away from winning this game. But.
And then on 3rd and 2, they were six feet away.
Okay, so 1st down, they get a carry for 3 yards from Chris Carson. They had to do it before the 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
They had to get to the 2-minute warning.
Actually, no. I mean, hypothetically, a pass play would have been best called on 1st down because it could have taken all 8 seconds and gotten you to the 2-minute warning anyway.
Here is what I'm saying in the stadium. The Seahawks should just run normal offense because the timeouts don't matter that much.
They're not that big a deal.
Right? In a 1-point game, if this would have been a 4-point game, the timeouts matter. But in a 1-point game, the timeouts, and they didn't end up mattering. They were going to get the ball. If the Seahawks didn't get a 1st down, the Rams were going to get the ball back with a good chunk of time left on the clock. And the difference between 140 or whatever and 150 is not that great. The Seahawks should have come out passing in this situation.
That is accurate. And it was 150 by the time they got it, in fact. But they did have...
Can you imagine on that... Okay, so 1st down, Carson gets a 3-yard run. Boom, 2-minute warning.
2nd down,
They were probably wondering about the pass here, is what I'm saying. The Rams.
Well, that's probably why they didn't call a timeout before the 2-minute warning. Because even though that technically would have saved you more time, it would have opened up the pass.
Okay, so then Carson gets a pretty solid run on 2nd down.
Yeah, I mean, he gets it to 3rd and 2 in a situation where it's looking like a very possible 1st down. Bill Barnwell is pointing out on Twitter that the Seahawks should go for it on 4th down if they're stopped on 3rd down because of, you know, the same issue of the Rams getting the ball back with so much time remaining.
Okay. So then on the 2nd down play.
Why are we focused on the 2nd down play? Let's just move down to the...
Tyler Lockett, this is a crucial play of the game because strategically, I think this was a mistake that the Seahawks made. But they see Tyler Lockett on this like potential end around, and they're like, whoa, that was wide open. The Rams were not defending that at all. 3rd down, they're like, this is when we hit him with it. And they do that on the option. They have it all covered. It's a loss of 6 or whatever on the play. And
I mean, Russell Wilson should not have pitched that ball.
He wasn't getting a 1st down anyway.
He might have gotten it. There was a better chance of it happening. And just it was too risky to pitch it in that situation.
Yes. They should have come out passing, though, on that 3rd down. Because the Rams were all on the line. If they pass there, that's a 1st down. Anyway, whatever. They don't.
So the Rams get the ball at their own 6 with a minute. I guess it's not a minute 50. It was a minute 50 when the punt was kicked. It's a minute 38 when they actually snapped the ball. And Gerald Everett, 9-yard completion on 1st down. Now it's a minute 18 at 2nd and 1. Things are looking pretty good. But then you have, and then an incompletion to Gerald Everett. But then on back-to-back plays, Robert Woods for 11 yards, Cooper Kupp for 9 yards, out of bounds both times.
These took like 4 seconds off the clock.
Yes.
It was incredible how quick they were making this. And I'm telling you, Jared Goff, this was, which one is the good one? Mr. Goff, Dr. Goff, whichever one it was. This was the good one.
Yes.
And he was throwing dimes on these plays.
Yes. And then, let's see, after a false start, another one of those completions out of bounds to Kupp for 11 yards to pick up the 1st down. Oh, now they've moved up to the 42.
Did the Seahawks not realize that they were going to be trying to throw it to the sidelines?
And then a 28-yard completion up the seam to Gerald Everett.
And I literally said, the game is over.
I was thinking they should have let the
call Joe a timeout. This is the Pelton Cast mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Let him score. Gerald Everett score.
Off, how fun would it have been to see Russell Wilson with two timeouts and at that point?
The Pelton Cast never wants to leave it up to the
kicker. A
little
less than a minute left.
We want the ball in the damn offense's hands, right?
Sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't.
I'm yelling, let him score. There's 45 seconds on the clock there. Nobody calls timeout. And I'm also yelling, call timeout, Pete. Save this time on the clock. What are you doing?
I don't know if that would have made sense because I think the Rams then would have run on second down.
They didn't run at all that series.
I'm surprised that they did not run.
I kept expecting a run where they would get it down to 1 or 2 seconds or whatever. They never did. And it was pass.
Which I think is largely to Sean McVay's credit that he wasn't settling for being in field goal range, being enough, and still just wanted to pick up more yardage.
So 3rd and 10, they get the delay of game, an egregious delay of game. That also, it took those refs like 25 seconds to call.
Whichever one is the bad goff got that one.
I feel like Gurley was like, because they had Gurley as like the up man, basically. Gurley was like talking to the center while the delay of game was being called. It was just like nobody on that field for the Rams is aware that was happening. So the delay of game happens, then they get the completion, and it's field goal
to Everett for 9 yards, which is less than I thought that was longer. It felt like about 20 yards on that completion.
Greg Zuerlein, how long of a field goal is this exactly?
44 yards.
We know that he is money from 44 yards, right? Greg Zuerlein is not missing this field goal. Never has. Never will.
Yeah, let me pull up the tweet here on Greg Zuerlein's stats inside 50 yards because they are quite good. According to Justice Misgata via Pro Football Reference, 112 of 115, 97% on kicks of 44 yards are shorter.
97%.
Which is not quite the way you should do it because that includes a lot of much shorter kicks. But anyways, it was unusual for him to miss this.
It's over. The game's over at this point.
Yes. Right.
The Seahawks have lost. They played a very good game, and they lost in almost identical fashion that they've lost in the past. And the Rams somehow, some way, get a victory in this game. It is devastating. Jared Goff does not deserve to beat Russell Wilson in this game.
Absolutely not.
Right? And then, this 44-yard field goal?
Yes.
And then, from 44 yards away, the field goal is up, and it ever so slightly, it's just going a little bit to the right, and a little bit to the right. You can feel the breath of Paul Allen bearing down, and the ball tucks right outside of the goalpost. Have a nice flight back to St. Louis, Jeff Fisher. This is a Seahawks victory. And the Seahawks now are 4-1 somehow, some way, with a point differential of +2 in their victories.
that math does not check out.
Incredible.
Please do not say that.
Incredible. And the Rams are now 3-2 with two consecutive shootout losses despite Aaron Donald's best efforts. We have got ourselves a race for the NFC West.
One that also includes, by the way, the first place team in the NFC West. That's still being the San Francisco 49ers at 3-0. Yeah, I mean, look, whether that kick went in or not does not affect how good a football team the Seahawks are, but it has huge ramifications in terms of their chances of A, winning the NFC West, and B, just making the playoffs at all.
Just win, baby. That's all that matters. Just win.
I mean,
it's not like they didn't beat the Cincinnati Bengals on this.
No,
right?
I'm not saying
they
that
beat
it was
the team
a bad
that was in the Super Bowl last year.
I mean, they are who we thought they were. This is, I think, what we expected from this game. A game they were favored in by 1 point.
The Rams were favored by 1 point. It was a pick 'em some places. The Seahawks might have been favored by a point some places. This was exactly the type of game that we came to expect, and nighttime football at the clink is magic.
Why,
every single time.
Why can't we play all the games at night? Have they considered that? Have they thought of that?
The crowd was rocking. Everything about it felt great. There was such good energy in the house. This was one of the best games that I've ever been at. Just seeing the team celebrate after the game, Pete being fired up, Trey Flowers running around with the 12th man flag, despite how terrible he played in the game.
It wasn't the best game by Trey Flowers. No, it hasn't been the best season. Second year quarterbacks, rough go for the Seahawks on second year quarterbacks lately.
So much fun. Like this is why we pay attention to football, is to feel these feelings and to feel the relief of winning.
God, there were so many feelings in this game. As we detailed. But we got to talk about some other stuff. Okay, first off, we haven't talked enough about Chris Carson. 27 carries in this game, 118 yards. It wasn't a dominant effort, but it was a very strong effort, very solid effort by Chris Carson.
And the Chris Carson of weeks 1 through 3 is a distant memory.
Yeah. It's been 2 weeks since he fumbled.
I mean, that's the good thing about having 2 games in a week, right? Jared Goff, it's also been 1 week since he fumbled.
We haven't talked about the Russell Wilson touchdown to Tyler Lockett.
Oh my God.
That is one of the most incredible plays.
Mini year set.
I mean, just on both ends of that, Wilson to be able to find room for that throw when everyone assumed he was just throwing it away, to be able to extend the play to find it, and then Lockett to have the presence to get both feet down while making that catch. Just astounding.
This was and you have to give credit to the individual players here, because Russ put the ball literally at the only place that Tyler Lockett could catch it, right?
Correct. In a place where a lot of people wouldn't catch it.
He actually missed a ball on the run later to John Brown. But this also has to be a testament to Pete Carroll's every blade of grass, right? This is like, you can be your hardest and try to make these plays, and sometimes it's going to happen, and it happened in this one. And that toe tap was just like, no way he got his feet down, right? We could see him catching the ball, but there's no way Tyler could get his feet down in that situation.
Can we talk about the thrill for a second?
Oh, my God.
4 catches, 81 yards. Sadly, though, a disappointing game for Will Disley, as he did not score a single touchdown for, I think it's the 4th time in his NFL career, because he's had multiple TD games. But
kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, just what are you even doing, Will
really,
Disley?
Really, I think we have to give a little toast here for the dog's house, right? Because there was a lot of dog action in this game.
Yes. Yes, there was. There was the third down play where Wilson pitches back to Lockett. The person who blew that play up was Corey Littleton.
Wait, oh, I hadn't even thought about Corey Littleton.
Corey Littleton forces the pitch back to Tyler Lockett, who's tackled by Marcus Peters. It wasn't a great game for Marcus Peters.
There are a lot of Huskies on the Rams defense. They have four.
Greg Gaines had on the Clay Matthews. Personal foul, roughing the passer. It was Greg Gaines that blew that play up, and that was with Taylor Rapp not suiting up for this game due to injury. The Seahawks, after getting run all over by Todd Gurley early in this game and upholding him to 51 yards and 15 carries.
I don't actually think Shoddy has bad ideas in the micro sense of actual tape grinding. It's the overall misunderstanding of what things are good that is problematic. Zach, we won the fucking game. Be cool for a second. God damn.
Wow, you're calling out the person who's most excited to listen to this podcast.
But it's just like, give it a day.
This is an aggressive tag.
Wait until tomorrow, right?
All right, I don't know if you have anything else. Do you have anything else specific that we need to discuss?
No.
Because there's one other. If you want to talk about the give it a day, there is one thing we need to discuss.
What is that?
The 4th-and-1.
Oh, God. I mean, I don't know if I... Pete Carroll almost lost the team this game.
Yeah.
Just when you think about that field goal, that decision, they were at the 30-something.
31. It was a 48-yard attempt.
At the 31, it's a 4th-and-1. They come out and you're like, yeah, they're going to go for it. Because, of course, they're going to go for it. This is an obvious situation to do so.
Even Troy Aikman thought they should go for it. If Troy Aikman you should go for it and you don't go for it, something has gone horribly wrong.
Wow. I need to rethink some things. Don't tell me Mike Zimmer thought that they should have passed.
Oh, no.
When they came out and it was clear that they were doing the trying to get the Rams offside thing, it was just like, what are you doing? What is the plan here? You're actually going to kick this?
By the way, real quick, in the midst of this anger.
Yes.
Russell Wilson's ability to draw free plays. Like
he's getting more expert. If he could figure out how to run a sneak, Russell Wilson would actually become the perfect quarterback.
I mean, that's part of the reason I think that they didn't go for it. It is a real killer in short yardage situations to have a quarterback who is completely incapable of running a sneak. I asked in our group thread how much you would pay to have Russell Wilson be able to execute a sneak. Now, everyone was then so upset about the decision in the Jason Myers missed field goal that no one answered that. But, I mean, it's a large amount of money I would pay for that.
I mean, that decision to kick that field goal was a 10-point swing. Because
I don't like the term 10-point swing.
It wasn't? Okay, let's say that you go for it, right?
Because the Rams might have gotten the ball back in the same spot if they had not gotten it. And then they could have still scored a touchdown.
But the because
they still would have had the same
going for it are that the Rams probably are not going to touch the ball again.
If
or at
you
least
get
you're
it,
not,
yes.
not going to touch the ball again in any sort of like chance to score, right?
Yes.
Instead, what you're doing is you're actually giving them better field position.
Yes.
But I mean, most often Jason Myers is not going to miss that field goal. There was some bad luck involved, but the process was bad too.
You have to go for it in that situation.
100 times out of 100. It was one of those things where it wasn't like, this wasn't results-based decision-making. If he would have hit the field goal, they still should have gone for it.
Yes, everyone was upset before Jason Myers actually came out for the field goal.
That's the thing, is like, this isn't a retroactive thing. Pete just made the wrong decision. And that's the thing that I don't.
There was someone who replied to Zach saying, "Oh, you would have complained if they would have gone for it on fourth down and not gotten it." It's like, it's not a tenet of the analytics community to get upset when people go for it on fourth down because they were too aggressive.
Yes,
like that's not a thing that happens.
Yeah. But it's like the positives of going for it are so overwhelming, and like most likely they would have picked it up.
I think it was about 50-50. They're less than 50% on converting fourth and one in the Russell Wilson era.
In the whole era?
Yeah.
They've got to get better.
I wouldn't look it up. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem is this is something they care so deeply about being good at, the ability to pick up 1 yard when they need to run for 1 yard, and yet they are still terrible at it, which is troubling.
It's because they're literally telling the defense what play they're running.
Yeah.
And they try to do something different on third down at the end of the game, and it was still wrong.
They
pivoted into a wrong decision.
The execution was bad. I still appreciated the thought process because it wasn't just running into the line.
They should have passed.
Yes.
In all situations, you should pass.
Well, here's a fun fact. They ran 43 times in this game and threw 23 passes. And what Pete Carroll said was Russell Wilson's best game of his career.
I mean, he passed really good in those 23
times. And some of those runs were Russell Wilson scrambles.
There was a good chunk. Russell Wilson had sometimes when you watch Russ is spryer than he's been in a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when he's trying to duck through like a tight window, he gets grabbed by his ankles and gets pulled down, and that happened very little in this game. So, Russ played a perfect game. In the end, the Seahawks beat the Rams. It took the hand of Tedrick and the breath of Paul, but Russell Wilson beat the Rams, and the Seahawks are 4-1.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.